This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Nowhere to run to, nowhere to hide last week as financial markets around the world blew up one after another. Some relief for investors at week's end, but by that time, you may have already stuffed your mattress with the quaking dollars that are supposed to support your retirement, a home, college, everything. So what to do now with the spooked and battered American nest egg? This hour on Point, advice. Financial experts weigh in on what to do with your money now. You can join the conversation. Have you dared to peek at your portfolio? How's it look? Are you buying, selling, taking a deep breath? What's your question for the experts? We have a great cast to help us sort through all this, and Lord knows we may need it. Joining me first from Chestnut Hill, Massachusetts, is Alicia Minnell, Professor of Management Sciences at the Carroll School of Management at Boston College. She's Director of the Center for Retirement Studies, served on the President's Council of Economic Advisors in the Clinton administration, and was Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for Economic Policy. She spent 20 years at the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston. Alicia Minnell, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm great, though like everybody else, I'm wondering how to survive this whole period. From Centennial, Colorado, we're joined by Susie Johnston, certified financial planner and owner of Cherry Hills Investment Advisors. Her clients tend to have savings of $300,000 to $600,000. Susie Johnston, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
And with us from Washington, Robert Frick. He is senior editor for Kiplinger's Personal Finance. Robert Frick, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
Alicia Minnell, first to you. I mean, what have you been telling your friends? I don't know, your kids, your cousins, anybody who, and lots of people must have been asking you on this last week, what to do with their nest egg. Is there some kind of big overall piece of advice? We'll get into all kinds of detail here. But what's your sort of fundamental outlook on what individuals should do when the overall scene is so chaotic and risky looking, Alicia?
My advice is that this is no place for we amateurs, and don't look, don't touch is probably the best advice at this point. And then focus on those things that you can control. And I've put a lot of emphasis on staying with your job and not retiring prematurely, because given a couple of years, this stuff will shake itself out. And if you're not forced to draw on any of this money in the short term, it gives you a little flexibility. So control what you can control and just ignore what you can't control is my advice these days.
Susie Johnston, don't look, don't touch, and in a couple of years, maybe this will all work itself out. Are you comfortable, confident, giving your clients that advice?
That's what we do. It's too late to sell now, and I agree wholeheartedly with Alicia. One of the things we tell clients, tighten your belt. Don't spend as much as you've been spending. Try to be as careful as you possibly can. A lot of people have retired early. Some of them are deciding to go back to work. That's another good idea. As much as you can save and as much as you can make in this trying times will help immensely.
And are you saying to your clients that they can, should have that confidence in a couple of years, things will be back in the pink?
Yeah, markets go up, markets go down. Last week was a bad week, though. It's something we haven't experienced before. When your savings is, when you're losing your savings, your cash money, people were, that a part of it anyway, as you know, they broke the buck on one of the oldest mutual fund money market companies there was. It's scary.
Robert Frick, how about the don't look, don't touch advice? That's going to be hard for an awful lot of people. Is really sit tight the savviest, position right now when things, I mean, last week, things were really going down the chute fast for a while.
Yeah, I have to agree. If you even look at the news, I mean, one of the first things you say is turn off CNBC because everyone's emotional. And when you are in an emotional state and you're under financial duress, you tend to make the worst mistakes. And that's been proven throughout history. So one of the things you need to do is consider yourself a bull and get rid of the red flags.
I want to get our listeners in here because they're out there dealing with this and all the uncertainty around money. And I'm not sure they're completely on board with some of the sit tight advice. Let's go to Heidi in Crozet, Virginia. Heidi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have an issue with the media mantra, don't sell, stay invested for the long term. Back in 2000, I had a, sizable portfolio invested, and I had it with a professional manager, and they said, just stay invested. And I just watched it go down for a year and a half, and, said, I fired the guy. I said, this is insane. Put in cash. When the market started turning up, I invested again, made money this time. I got out as soon as I saw the volatility last fall, and it had the bulk of my portfolio in cash for, the past 6 to 8 months. And, as a result, my portfolio is up when many of my friends who are like, no, we're just staying invested, are down in double digits. So
Susie, what did you do with that cash for those 6 to 8 months? Was it in a money market fund? Are you confident in that at this point?
Oh, it's in multiple different banks, so each one is under the FDIC limit.
So you're covered that way. And when will you have the courage to get back in? The market was up by a couple big whacks late last week. Is that enough for you? What's it going to take to get you back in the pool?
No, I am watching the technical patterns, and I'm going to wait till there's a long-term bull market signal. And yes, I'm going to lose the first 3 to 5% of the upswing waiting for confirmation, but I would rather do that than have lost 20% and then make 5% back up.
How many years can you wait for the signs of a long-term bull market to return?
I think it'll happen sometime in 2009, but I'd rather, like I said, just be keeping up with inflation, barely at this point, with interest rate income, then be suffering losses through the downturn.
Heidi, stick with us. Susie Johnston in Colorado, what do you say to Heidi? Sounds like a tough and educated customer. She didn't like staying the course in 2000, lost a lot of money, fired her financial advisor, and feels like she's done better this time. Of course, she got out, as she says, 6 to 8 months ago into cash.
Well, I'm so glad she did it 6 to 8 months ago instead of now. That's a good place to be right now in cash. She certainly has. But studies have shown that you do miss the uptick when you're totally in cash when the market does correct.
Well, the market uptick isn't going to all happen in 1 week, is my point. So, yes, I will miss a bit of it, but as long as I don't stay in cash the rest of my life, it's better to be at zero and miss 5% and then go up 20 than be down 20%, and then hit the full 25% uptick.
Yeah, Heidi, thanks for calling. Robert, do you have Heidi's same confidence that in maybe 2009 that turnaround might be afoot, or might we be in for a longer lull, downturn, than that?
Well, I'd have to take issue just from the start that there are many people like Heidi, but there are many, many more people who get the timing wrong. Timing is basically luck. It's shown in the market. For every one person like her, studies have shown there are 6 or 7 people who get it at the wrong time. In the last 10 years, as a matter of fact, the average portfolio has gone up 4%, while the market's gone up 11%. So most people do not make the market return just by virtue of bad market timing. So congratulations to those who pull it off, but for most people, it just doesn't work. As far as what's going to happen in the future, I think we're in for a long and a rough and rocky road. I wouldn't expect things are going to shake out for at least a year.
Alicia, people are counting on these funds. You say keep your job. That sounds like a good advice right now. Maybe retire later than you had planned. But some people are in the midst of retirement already or close to it. And given what's happened with fixed pensions in the last 20 years or so, an awful lot of people just don't have a lot of leeway here. They need some kind of return. You know, they're counting on at least, 4 or 5%. Can they reasonably expect that in this next turn of the economy?
So, I mean, I think that Heidi's question brought up a lot of points. I'd just like to agree with Bob that she is a person who has been watching the markets, sort of made lucky decisions or maybe good decisions, but that's so atypical of most of us. Most of us aren't paying attention till we hear on the news that the markets collapse. We look and then we panic. And it's for the bulk of those people that the message is don't do anything. Now, for people who absolutely have to retire now, I would think that you try to just stay away from your equity investments for a few years and let them recover. I mean, we've had crashes before. 1987, the market went down, 30 or 40% in a couple of days, and it recovered by the end of the year. The dot-com bubble recovered in a couple of years. But just one other ball on the table, and that is that equities really over the past 10 years haven't been performing very well. According to some indices, we're sort of back at 98 or 99. So it's not just that we have this immediate turmoil, which has been horrible in the last week or so, but also we've had this period of very, very low returns on equities. So people have a hard time saving. They don't have a lot of money. They need good returns, and we haven't been seeing them in the long run as well as in this last tumultuous week.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about your money in the midst of Wall Street meltdown and where to put it now, how to think about your personal finances in the midst of financial chaos it has felt on many days lately. Alicia Minnell is with us from Boston College's Carroll School of Management. She's director of the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College. Susie Johnston of Cherry Hills Investment Advisors joins us from Centennial, Colorado. And Robert Frick, editor, senior editor of Kiplinger's Personal Finances here. Let's take a call from Al in Sterling, Massachusetts. Al, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
I think I speak for a lot of, let's call it, lower middle class Americans who aren't trying to answer the questions you have on wheeling and dealing and moving bank accounts of more than $100,000 around.
That'd be nice, huh?
Yeah, we're just trying to find where to put our $5,000 or $10,000 of savings where it's safe. For example, I'm solid lower middle class. I make $60,000 to $80,000 a year. I'm self employed.
Yep.
I'm trying to set up a SEP. What financial advisor I have says, well, put it into an annuity. But I'm wondering, is that safe? Is a CD safe? Is an annuity safe?
Al, how old are you, Al, if I may ask?
I'm 61.
61. You hear that income level, and you're looking to do with the savings that you've managed to pull together. Alicia, let me come first to you. What's your broad advice to Al here?
So this is my chance to get in my plug. Because the key thing that people like Al can do to make themselves most secure in retirement is to work longer. And why is working longer so important? The primary reason it's so important that if you claim your Social Security benefit at age 70 instead of at age 62, your monthly benefit is 75% higher. And this is income that is adjusted for inflation and secure for life. And it's always been a desirable source of income. But the past year actually, has just highlighted how important it is. And so for people like Al, the more of that really secure type of income that they can get, the better off they will be in retirement.
But Al's only 61 years old. Right. I mean, let's hope and pray and say that Al lives to be, 100. Lots of Americans are now. Is Social Security going to cover him?
Social Security, for anybody who's about to claim benefits, they can count on receiving whatever they are entitled to for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, but is that going to be enough to eat and keep a roof over his head and a little gas or whatever we're burning 20 years from now in the car? I mean,
it was never supposed to solve all his problems, but or pay for everything that he needs, mm-hmm. but it will be there. It will go up each year in line with inflation. I mean, I would think that this year Social Security might adjust the benefits by 6% to reflect the higher gas prices. So to have this steady base on which he can then build his additional savings is so important. And the bigger that base, the more secure his retirement.
So Al, keep working. There's advice number one. It's not exactly time on the golf course. But even with that, Robert Frick, Al describes himself as lower middle class. He doesn't have hundreds and hundreds of thousands. But what he does have, he wants to do the right thing with. He says, what should it be? An annuity? A CD? When you look at someone in his broad economic circumstances, Bob, what's your advice for where he can, might safely put that money that it's not just going to shrink under inflation and shrivel?
Right. Well, I'd have to know exactly how much money he has and what investments he has. But if he only has, you know, $5,000, then keep it in the bank, you know, for goodness sakes. I mean, you should have 6 months, especially in these trying times, of just your day-to-day expenses saved up. So get that emergency fund saved. As far as an annuity, I don't think that's a good idea. You have to be very careful about buying annuities, and why buy one now if you're not going to be retiring for a while? Once you get that nest egg saved up, I wouldn't discourage going into the stock market, but I'd do it in a way with, say, a target date retirement fund or retirement income fund, in which you get a broad portfolio that includes all different kinds of stocks, but also a lot of bonds and cash. So it'll grow, not as steadily as a bank account, but it will grow a lot more than a bank account over time. But, you know, get that nest egg saved, especially right now. Pay off your credit card debt. Get that nest egg saved.
Susie Johnston in Colorado, you've been at this advising for a while. And we all know the kind of advice, you know, that we've generally heard under the years: diversify, have some stocks, some bonds, and this and that, if you've got the scratch together to do that. Has this past that we're in right now, this difficult time crisis, I guess by any measure, has it changed any of your fundamental advice to your clients? Has it made you rethink how you've been advising clients for the last, I don't know how many years, Susie, but is it given you pause to kind of question some of the tried and true advice that financial advisors have given for years, maybe your own?
Actually, I think that what it's done is made us feel more comfortable in the way we think. We believe that you should have, actually, as Robert said, first an emergency fund. Then when you begin to invest, after you've saved, which is the most important thing, you make more in the long run by saving rather than investing. But once you are able to invest, after you have completed your emergency fund, you should have tranches in your investments. And I would suggest to Al that as he begins to invest, he dollar cost average in, do a little bit at a time. And if you have tranches of bonds, and then you have tranches of cash, so if he's going to retire in at age 65, he probably needs to work on his emergency fund to have at least probably a year or two before he retires. Then have a section of bonds, and then have some growth too, because you do need some growth in your portfolio. So diversification is, in our opinion, that's what works. And our clients have certainly lost money in these bad times, but they certainly have outperformed the market because they have cash and bonds also in their portfolio.
Alicia Minnell, how about you when it comes to that kind of fundamental advice? You know, some people are waking up in the last couple of weeks and saying, this just doesn't look like I can count on the old formulas. We may have some fundamental problems in this American economy, maybe in the global economy. I mean, people have rushed to gold, for example. I'm not saying that's where to go, but can Americans fundamentally sort of have faith in the old sort of three-legged stool approach to investing, the diversify and then don't think about it too much approach? Or are we in some brave, scary new world here, Lisa?
Well, I think that we have it's become very evident that we have a pension system that subjects the average person just to an enormous degree of heartburn and real fear, because we've moved from the traditional defined benefit plans where people would have gotten a benefit for life to 401k plans, mm-hmm. where individuals see their piles dwindle in these crises, and they know increasingly that that's going to be the only source of income other than Social Security, so that we really do have this extremely uncertain retirement system, which is hard because people work their whole lives and they hope for some security as they stop working, and we don't have things set up that way. In terms of just the traditional investment advice, I think that all of it really was highlighted during this recent crisis. I mean, hopefully older people had moved away from total reliance on equities and had a bigger share of bonds, and hopefully within their equity holdings, they were well diversified and not all, let's say, in financials. So all the rules of thumb for traditional investing held. I think what this highlights is just how fragile our retirement system is.
And that fragility, just as this huge wave of boomers are hitting retirement age.
Right, exactly right. That's why this retiring later is really the key, because it allows you to get bigger Social Security benefits. It allows you to put some more money in these plans and not have to retire just at the trough. And then it shortens the period over which you have to support yourself and use these precious retirement assets. So, I mean, it is something that you can control, whereas all this other stuff is really out of the control of the average person.
Still, a lot of people wanted to go fishing. Lori's calling from Pleasant View, Tennessee. Lori, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
My husband is interested in investing in the Thrift Savings Plan. That's the federal plan. He's in the military.
Okay.
But he's scared to now with the market as it is. And also, we'll be moving, as happens with military families, in the next 6 to 8 months. So we're looking at selling our house.
Okay.
So I'd just like some advice about what we should do. Should we go ahead and delve into the market now, or should we wait?
Stick with us, Lori. Robert Frick, so Lori's husband is in the military. They're thinking about selling their house because they're going to be moving in the military. You thinking about getting into the Thrift Savings Plan the federal government offers him as a serviceman. What do you say?
Well, again, you really need to know more about their particular situation, but I think it's a fine idea as long as they have their emergency fund, as long as they're going to be getting some money presumably from their house, as long as they don't need that money immediately, as long as it's long-term money and they're probably a fairly young couple, absolutely. If you certainly have 15, 20, 25 or more years to retire, I mean, over time, you just can't argue with the long-term success of investing. As long as you have a good diversified portfolio. You had said earlier that stocks hadn't done well the last 10 years. Well, that's not really true. If you were properly diversified and you had money overseas and in emerging markets, which I think all of us recommend, certainly we do at Kiplinger's, you would have done very well the last 10 years.
And what about the federal government as a guarantor here? I mean, that's Lori's question in part, I'm hearing, is, you know, given all the demands on the Treasury now and this huge new bailout and everything else, can people trust the sort of, you know, the mark of the U.S. federal government as a secure backer for investments?
I think so. I mean, I just read this morning someone said that, you know, the good news is the government is standing behind all of these accounts. You know, the bad news is we're standing behind the federal government. But it's going to affect us all eventually. But is the government going to let service people down with their savings? Absolutely not. They showed last week they're not even going to let money markets break the buck, which was an astounding move. I mean, a dramatic move that nobody could have predicted even a couple weeks ago. But they're going to do whatever they can and leverage us as much as they have to, which is not good news for the long term, to protect these accounts, because the consequences of doing anything else are a financial gridlock, which shoves us into a recession or even a depression.
You're talking there about money markets, and of course, there's been a lot of questions about them recently, whether they would be secure. You're saying they decided not to let money markets break the buck. Can you explain what you're saying there, Robert?
Sure. money markets are held by a lot of people who think that they're as good as a federally insured bank account, and they're not.
These are sort of cash savings with one of the big banks, a money market fund.
Mm-hmm. Right. A money market fund is basically a bunch of short-term investments. Some of them are treasuries, but not a lot of them, but short-term commercial paper and things like short-term investments from Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae.
Whoops.
You know, yikes. But everyone, all the people who hold these, keep them to a buck, keep the value to a dollar. And breaking the buck is sacrilegious.
That is, you should get 100 cents on your dollar, in other words.
Exactly.
It should be secure, right.
And if you say the next day, in this one case, they said, well, you know, it's not going to be worth a buck. It's going to be worth 97 cents.
Mm-hmm.
That happened because there was a run on that money market fund because they held so much Lehman, you know, paper.
Right.
And then there were, I think it was $144 billion was withdrawn from money markets last week. Now, there are $3.4 trillion held in money markets. But if you were to have a run on money markets, it would be a tantamount to the run on the banks in the 1930s. And you just cannot let that happen. So the government stepped in and said, okay, we're guaranteeing this. Don't worry about your money market. And they had to do that because, again, the consequences would have been dire if they hadn't.
Elisa, can the government sort of back up and bail out everything here? Are you confident in the full faith and et cetera of the United States government at this point? We're getting into some pretty big numbers.
Well, I mean, first of all, this is a once-in-a-100-year event, so...
But we're living through it.
We're living through it, and we lived through 9/11. I mean, it seems like we have a lot of once-in-a-100-year events, but we are living through it. I guess I do have confidence in the government. It's going to be messy. They've taken on a lot of responsibility with Fannie and Freddie and AIG and then the proposal to buy all these mortgage-backed securities. But I think we can do that, and we will get through this period. It's not going to be a straight line, though, from here to there. I think markets are going to be tumultuous, not like last week, because things have definitely calmed down. But there are going to be ups and downs going forward.
Susie Johnston, what about on the bond front? If people traditionally, people, you know, got nervous about stocks, they might move some money into bonds. Does that look like a secure path now? Have they done better than stocks in this tumultuous few weeks?
Well, bonds can be risky as well. So, you know, that's the thing about being diversified. You need to be in several different kinds of bonds. We use mutual funds at our firm, so we have different managers that do different ways of bonds. Muni bonds have actually done pretty well in the last year or so, which if you're making quite a bit and you have tax concerns, muni bonds are great. You just have to be diversified with everything. And with the last caller, I would like to say that Thrift Savings Plan through mm-hmm. the federal government is diversified as well. They have stock funds, they have bond funds, they have money market funds. So as she begins to contribute to the Thrift Savings Plan, they could do, like we talked about before, dollar cost average into different parts of the market for mm-hmm. her. And I would also like to recommend that she maybe go see a financial planner because they can certainly give her specific recommendations.
And those on the phone with you in the last week, Susie, how have they been? You've seen people through all kinds of times here. Have people been freaking out?
People are scared. Yes, they are. People are scared. We've called. We sent a letter out showing them that their money markets that they had with, we use Schwab, mm-hmm. For example, were solvent and okay, and that they had plenty of insurance for our clients. They're scared, and they have every reason to be scared. But they are very diversified. They all have enough cash to last them for the time period, for hopefully enough time period that we need to get through this.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about your money in the midst of Wall Street meltdown and where to put it now, how to think about your personal finances in the midst of financial crisis. Alicia Minnell has been with us. She's with Boston College's Carroll School of Management. Robert Frick is here from Kiplinger's Personal Finance, senior editor there. Susie Johnston joins us from Centennial, Colorado. She's a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, owner of Cherry Hills Investment Advisors, an independent firm in Littleton, Colorado. Mark's calling from Malone, New York. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Tom, my question relates to many years ago, my generation, 57, we were told that we have to save and save and save because there probably won't be any Social Security, et cetera.
Mm.
Now, those laws and regulations that apply to us people that were diligent enough to save back then are now putting us in a box, so to speak.
How so, Mark?
Rules and, excuse me?
How so? What kind of box?
Well, the rules and regulations on it are so antiquated, you can't get at that money. Now, a Roth IRA, after 5 years, you can get in there, get that money, take it out, put it in the bank, invest it in real estate, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The rules that govern the traditional IRAs right now make it almost impossible for not just myself, but all of us other people. And my question for your panel mm-hmm. is, why can't we roll that over into those Roths without the big, huge fines that are in effect right now, and that'll give us more maneuverability down the road.
Robert Frick, how about it? It sounds like Mark has tried to do the right thing, and he feels trapped in the IRA structure rather than comforted by it.
So he wants to withdraw his money?
Sounds like he'd like to roll it into a Roth IRA or in any case, have more options as to how he invests it.
If you do have your money, and perhaps one of the other members of the panel can address this more specifically, but it always makes me nervous when people start talking about getting more access to their money. If it is there for retirement, then it should be perfectly fine where it is. If you need to roll it into a 401k or somewhere where you can get at it with less penalty, I agree that in a way we're kind of handcuffed, but you can also start putting your money in a 401k or a Roth IRA rather, starting now. So it's hard for me to recommend a big change without knowing what his situation is.
Mark, can you tell us a little more about why you feel the need to get at it and what you'd like to do with it?
Well, for instance, right now the housing market is down.
Mm-hmm.
There's some very good buys out there. Sometime go on the internet on the IRS site and look at the regulations to get at that money to buy real estate. All I'm saying is this, mm-hmm. is that those laws that I'm under are unfair to us versus the people that are now under the Roths. And I don't particularly want to get at my money.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to have more options. Like right now, in July, I sold my stock funds. I went to the money market. What if something starts happening with that money market? And I can't get my money out of there to put in a bank, in real estate. That's all I'm saying.
Yep. Alicia Minnell, how about it? The structures in which some diligent savers, perhaps like Mark it sounds, are working right now under government regulations, do they seem fair to you? Do they seem flexible enough to you to help people get through this tough time and maximize what they are able to save?
The IRAs and the 401ks were sent up for retirement saving. And so I'm very sympathetic with the notion that people shouldn't have access to those funds before what we would consider a normal retirement age. And actually, I view 59 and a half, which is when you can get access without having any tax burden, is almost too early. The other thing is that Mark may be the exception, but people get in trouble when they do anything too fancy. So, you know, just investing in a portfolio of stocks and bonds, leaving it there for their working years, and then slowly moving away from stocks and into bonds as they approach retirement seems, for the vast bulk of the population, far better than trying to move into sort of interesting investments such as real estate.
But Alicia, with respect, and I'm sure you don't mean to do this, but it sounds kind of like talking down to Mark. He's been told save and go out and fend for yourself, and he's trying to do that, in a thoughtful way. He put his money out of the stock market at a pretty good time. But he feels handcuffed compared to those who have a Roth IRA, who got in at a different time, who are operating under different constraints.
So I don't want to talk down to Mark, because I, like everybody else, is in the same boat. I'm approaching retirement, and I've seen my money go down. So I think there's no us and them. It's all of us here together. So, but on the other hand, I'm very sympathetic with how things are structured when they sort of prevent people from getting access to money. I think that's basically a good thing, that people need to sort of leave that money alone until they reach retirement. And it seems that unless Mark may be really the exception, who is just very knowledgeable, knows how to manage his portfolios very intelligently, but most of us get in trouble when we try to do anything too fancy here.
Susie Johnston, let me ask you, Mark raised real estate, housing. He says that there are bargains out there right now, at least to his eye. And he's thinking about maybe investing in some. What are you telling your clients about real estate now? Or maybe are there buying opportunities there or in other parts of the investment universe that this crisis has created?
Well, historically, if you own real estate, we've always thought real estate goes up. Well, obviously, the last 2 years, it hasn't. It's a change from what we're used to. Real estate versus being fully invested in the market has not produced the same returns as being invested in the market. But being diversified, as we've all said, is the most important thing to do. So if you have your 401k, you're fully contributing to it, your Roth IRA, you're contributing to it, and you want to buy real estate, then I think that's fine. But to have all of your money in real estate would be just as bad as having all of your money in stocks.
Do you see many of your clients tempted at this point, Susie, given how badly the housing market's been battered, or are they still thinking it's got a ways to fall?
I do. I have people ask that, and I tell them the same thing. Be diversified. If you have enough in your savings and your 401k, a rental property may be fine. They're a lot of work, and I always tell them that too. There's a lot of things that you don't think about before you buy one. You can buy real estate now within an IRA. If Mark wanted to do that, however, you have to pay for all the upkeep, all that kind of stuff within your IRA. I would certainly not recommend that.
Right. So, I was going to add that there are a lot of ways to invest in real estate within your IRA. It's if he wants to withdraw it and invest it, of course, that's a bad idea, because the deal was we're going to give you a tax break for investing it for the long term. But if you can still keep that deal and invest in real estate, even individual properties, where you can also do it through REIT funds or something like that. But I would agree that you're taking a terrific risk investing in real estate right now, because we are staring into the abyss. And to say that you can call the bottom of the real estate market in a certain area, I don't think anyone can do that with certainty right now.
I should say we've pulled together a lot of links to some pretty good personal finance information at our website. If you're interested in details, you should check it out at onpointradio.org. And Susie Johnston in Centennial, Colorado, I know we've got to let you go there, but I want to thank you very much for being with us this hour and for your insights. Thanks a lot for coming in, Susie.
You're welcome, Tom.
Susie Johnston, owner of Cherry Hills Investment Advisors in Littleton, Colorado. Let's take a call from Westbrook, Vermont, and Ross. Ross, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been listening. I listen to your program all the time and enjoy all the topics you cover.
Great. What's your question today, Ross?
Well, just like everybody else, I've watched my 401k go to a 101k. It's pretty well diversified, and I suspect that it'll come back up. It hasn't been hit too drastically. But something that I've been doing that a friend of mine introduced me to and actually set up through him, I know some laws have recently changed, but I took a certain amount of money, let's say around $10,000, and I'm in a managed currency account.
currency count, as in what they're trading in different currencies of different countries around the world?
I mean, currency moves back and forth around the globe every single day between countries and banks. And I've been in it about a year and a half, 2 years, and I've steadily made right around 14% a year on my money, which is nice.
That's pretty great. Now, do you actually have to make the trades? Do you decide when to buy and sell the yen or whatever it might be?
All I do is give them the money, just like in my 401k.
Robert Frick, how about currency trading as a spot for some cash? How's it look?
It's a zero-sum game. I mean, I'm glad he's ahead, but, you know, over time, the number of people ahead are essentially matched by the number of people who are behind. So it's not one of those things like the stock market, which steadily grows over time, or even real estate that steadily grows over time. So if you've got a sharp person who knows how to trade security or currencies, then great. But, you know, that's too risky for my blood.
And what about just diversifying into other currency-denominated investments in the first place? With some of what's going on in this country right now, we've heard concern voiced that the U.S. dollar may be on a weakening trend. Again, are you advising, whether it's currency or just investment abroad, how are you advising your readers these days? Right. Should they be bumping up that portion of their overseas investment or not?
Well, we've been encouraging people to do that for years. But, of course, there's a world of difference between currency trading, mm-hmm. in which you have to guess which direction the currency is going, and owning foreign-denominated, say, bonds, mm-hmm. which is a terrific idea because, again, it's diversification. But also, if you move to, say, emerging markets, which are obviously riskier, but then you can get bonds that yield more. You know, it's almost mm-hmm. the equivalent kind of junk bonds. So absolutely, overseas, we've been preaching that for years, and that gets to my previous point, which is if you had been invested overseas for the last 10 years, you would have, on an equities, on your stocks alone, you'd probably be up 12 or 14%. If you would have kept it strictly domestically, you'd probably only be up 6 or 7%.
Well, Ross, congratulations on your 14% in the last couple of years. That's pretty good as of late. How about Joan in North Point, Florida? Hi, Joan. You're on the air.
Hi. I decided in about year 2000, after reading Mr. Burko's column in our newspaper every Saturday, he had a column on I-bonds, and I started putting money into I-bonds.
What's an I-bond, Joan? Educate us.
Inflation bond. Mm-hmm. They're like double E bonds, mm-hmm. U.S. bonds. Hardly anybody knows about them. You buy them at the bank, any bank.
Okay, and how have they worked for you?
Okay, there's no tax on the interest until you cash them in. You cannot cash one for 6 months. They're in small denominations, mm-hmm. 50, 100, I'm not sure about 200, but 500, 5,000, 1,000, 5,000, 10,000, I think is the largest.
And have you had a good return?
I've had a wonderful return. I just cashed two $10,000 bonds that I bought in April of 2000, and I donated the money to into my university, Purdue University, in the form of a charitable gift annuity.
Well, good for you on many fronts, then. Let us look at those I-bonds and the whole inflation picture. Robert Frick, how about it?
Not right now. They're not really that attractive.
Because what, people are already factoring in a lot of expectation of inflation now, or why?
Well, you know, they're supposed to go up with inflation. The rate is fixed on two basic things, which is it reflects the current rate of inflation. However, demand for these things is so high that when you buy them, you're really not getting much of a return at all. If you like the whole idea of keeping ahead of inflation to some degree, and if that brings you comfort, then great, you can invest in them. But don't expect to get a return that is really going to, in some cases, even keep up with inflation. It's just like Treasury securities right now. They're so popular.
But
even beyond tips, mm-hmm. Just regular Treasury bonds,
right.
and bills and notes, they're so popular because people are flying to safety that their yields have dropped so low that you're only going to make, say, in some cases, 1 or 2%. I-bonds, We just ran a story online on Kiplinger.com, Why I-Bonds Look Like Losers. So I'd encourage you to read that before getting into them. Now, if you're already in them, if you already bought them at a good price, then you're probably ahead of the game. But to go in them right now, probably not a good move.
Joan, it sounds like your timing was good, and good on you for that. Alicia Minnell, I've got a caller here I can't even get to. Time is too short, but says, what about owning stocks in banks? Has shares in Washington Mutual. Is the bailout going to make that attractive again?
I think Washington Mutual may well be bought by other entities. So that it's not clear it's become a very attractive investment. I just want to say on the I-bonds and the mm-hmm. and the tips, this may not be the optimal time to buy them, mm-hmm. but having inflation-adjusted assets as part of your portfolio is an extremely desirable thing to do. So if the, when the markets calm down, having tips and I-bonds in a retirement portfolio is a smart move.
Alicia, we've heard from you in conversations past about your concern at the small percentage of people who are well enough situated as they face retirement.
Right.
What is the last week, or for that matter, year, done to that picture? I mean,
We had done a story that, or a study actually, that showed that 43% of households approaching retirement are not going to be able to maintain their standard of living. And we did that before the big decline in the stock market over the last year, much less the last week. And this is only going to exacerbate that problem. I just want to make one other point, because I think it's important to focus on things that we can control. And one is working longer. The other is, how do we feel about Social Security? Because after the election, one issue that's going to come up is, what should we do with this program? There's no easy solution, but boy, does that money that you get through Social Security look good.
If it weren't there, watch out. Something to keep in mind as people consider presidential politics. Alicia Minnell at Boston College, thanks for being with us. And Robert Frick at Kiplinger's Personal Finance, thanks to you as well, Robert. Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Good luck out there. This is On Point.